Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring ESPN, Big Ten Network, and Inside Lacrosse analyst and my Homewood homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Today, we'll also be joined by Inside Lacrosse publisher, Terry Foy. And in the second half of the podcast, Terry will bring in IL High School and recruiting editor, Kai Zanders, to talk about the implications to the high school scene. We have a lot to discuss, fellas, so let's get it. Terry and Mark, how are you doing today, Mark?
Tough day. Really, really tough day. And the three of us were together right around this time yesterday morning with as much hope as we could have, because there were still some conferences and teams and games in play for this weekend. And then as the morning unfolded, as the early afternoon unfolded, all those things kind of went by the wayside. So I went to bed last night just kind of in a daze. Woke up in a daze. A lot of times you sleep on it and gives you some clarity. But this is just a really difficult time, not just for the student athletes in lacrosse and other sports, but there's just a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear right now amongst people. So it's a tough Friday morning. Happy to be with you guys and talk about some things and see what you're hearing, what I'm hearing, what everybody's experiencing. And I think this is going to be important as we move forward with handling this.
Couldn't agree more. Terry, how are you doing today?
Well, I think it's appropriate that we woke up to a gray and rainy and dreary day. It's a metaphor for the mood. And I think that, as I've said over the course of the last 7 days, my opinion and stance and feeling has evolved. And one of the latest stages of evolution was walking around my neighborhood last night. I live in a neighborhood with a lot of bars and restaurants, and looking in the windows and seeing a lot of people in there and being like, is that a good idea? Like, are these people infected and they're transmitting to each other, like, unwittingly right now? And I realized that I had come to the natural reaction that had led to all these decisions that had been made in the preceding two or three days. So, I think that it helps, kind of having that fear natively helps to validate some of the drastic measures that were taken. And subsequently, I think that the whole situation starts to mellow out. But at the same time, you get struck with the idea of, all right, what now? What are we going to do now? And so to whatever degree there's, I don't want to call it comfort, but relief in the finality, not waiting for the next shoe to drop, that relief doesn't feel very good. It doesn't come with very much in terms of associated positive vibes. So, just kind of feel, like Mark said, a little bit in a haze.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's back up and talk about how we got here. On March 11th of this week, the World Health Organization announced that the coronavirus known as COVID-19 had reached global pandemic status. Outside of the U.S., we saw how the virus was affecting sports. There were some European soccer games that got postponed, and people were talking about what to do about the Tokyo Olympics coming up. But the first American sporting event for me that hit my radar was when Johns Hopkins, which was set to host a 4-team pod of basketball teams for the first and second rounds of the NCAA Division III Hoops tournament, announced late on Thursday, March 5th, that spectators would not be allowed into the game. Now, at the time, it seemed a little bold and maybe overreactive, but there seemed to be some rationale behind it, and Hopkins in retrospect, it was a very good decision. But Terry, this week, remarkable, speedy snowballing series of events took the lacrosse sports world by storm. Can you walk us through the most prominent events of that timeline?
Yeah, absolutely. So Monday night, our staff started to hear rumblings of Amherst discussing suspending their season. We were able to confirm that decision had been made on Tuesday morning. We reported it, and a handful of subsequent equivalent decisions were made throughout the day, culminating with an announcement by Tufts, somewhat on behalf of the NESCAC, on Tuesday night, while some of these NESCAC schools were actually playing games, that NESCAC league and tournament play would be either suspended or canceled for the remainder of the spring. And so that was kind of the first decision that felt like it was going to have significant ripple effects because of the associated nature of these conferences, these networks of college and university presidents. And so, you know, focus shifted to Wednesday morning when, you know, there were more decisions being made around basketball tournaments, and particularly you saw the limitation of attendance in these basketball tournaments, and it felt as if that represented somewhat of a reprieve. And as we were having conversations, you know, on and off the record, internally and externally, about what our expectations for what it was going to involve, my thought was that the cancellation of seasons were pretty remarkably different depending on whether it was Division 1 and 2 versus Division 3, because of the nature of how it was going to affect scholarship athletes, the finances involved, etc. And so even when at 3 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon, when the Ivy League announced the cancellation of its season, which was on the heels of an earlier decision in the week to cancel its men's and women's basketball tournaments, it felt like that wasn't necessarily a domino that was going to push everything over. And then, of course, as things continued to evolve Wednesday night into Thursday, it led to the NCAA's decision on Thursday afternoon, right around that same time. I think it was 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. The NCAA's decision that the remaining winter championships and spring championships would all be canceled. And when that happened, at that point, the majority of large Division I conferences had made the decision that they were suspending or canceling their spring sports seasons. And so for those that hadn't made that announcement and decision, I think subsequent to that was the America East and maybe one other conference that came across my radar. It was really moot, because while programs have, to my understanding, the autonomy to continue to play should they choose so, no one was going to make the decision both to defy the very clear and obvious directive of the NCAA. And then also, you know, what's the point of playing if you can't play for a championship? So I think that, you know, the kind of very quick succession, but ultimately, in contrast with the NBA, incremental and trickle-out decision-making process led to both frustration, confusion, fear, a lack of hope, and then ultimately the finality. And so there's certainly, you can understand how this is making such a big and widespread and, you know, momentous decision requires time. It requires a lot of communication, you know, but certainly for those affected, I would imagine that they would have preferred ripping the Band-Aid off immediately, as opposed to, you know, having this feel like this lack of certainty around what their future held, you know, feel like a 48-hour kind of torture session.
Dick, you talk to a lot of these people, college coaches, officials, fans that have been impacted by this. What's the general reaction that you're hearing?
So, you know, these conversations took place over the last, you know, 72 hours. And initially, when the Division III programs were postponing, canceling, the Ivy League canceling, it was frustration. And it wasn't a lot of clarity. I think, you know, one Ivy League coach, I texted a couple of the Ivy League coaches and with the question, when the Ivy League canceled their season, is this non-negotiable? Or is this a fluid situation? And one coach wrote back, I'm not sure. And another coach wrote back, I'm done, or we're done, you know, season's over. So there was confusion, frustration. I was preparing for the Maryland-Virginia game this weekend in College Park, spoke with John Tillman on Wednesday. And then after that conversation, Maryland, a few hours later, put out their stadium and spectator protocols. Basically, so I'm like, okay, well, you know, Maryland is on board and looks like we're going to have a game. And then yesterday morning, speaking with Lars Tiffany, spoke with him around 11 a.m. for about 40, 45 minutes. Great conversation. And we did touch on the COVID-19 situation. And he said, you know, our men are focusing on playing a lacrosse game. And we know all the other parameters that are out there in terms of public health and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm asking my guys, you got to have 100% focus on Maryland because they're such a great team. Hung up the phone with him, was on the line with my producer from the Big Ten Network. And, you know, we were talking about the Big Ten men's basketball tournament, how unfortunate it was that fans couldn't be in attendance. However, well, what a great resource it is for all these people who have to be at home and are fans or just, you know, quarantined or self-quarantined, whether it's quarantined because they need to be or they feel like they should be because they don't want to get sick, and they can still watch the games. And then you hang up the phone, go on Twitter, and there it is, Big Ten men's basketball tournament canceled. And then from there, it was just rapid fire. Within 5 to 10 minutes, all the other Power Five conferences, the ACC, the SEC, Pac-12, Big 12 canceled their basketball tournaments. And right there, you're like, uh-oh, this is not good. This is not happening. So, and then as the day went on, what was sobering to me was when the ACC announced the cancellation of all their athletic events in the afternoon yesterday, I received an updated grid from ESPN, as I have a couple of ESPN games this year as well, in addition to Big Ten Network. And the grid was through the end of the month, which is what has been scheduled, not just for me, but for all the other broadcasters and production crews. And it's like, here's the updated production schedule. And everything was a black line through it. I mean, it looked like one of my fifth grade math tests from back in the day. Like everything's gone. Everything's wrong. You know, I mean, it's just like, I'm like, you're looking at this thing and you're like, oh my God, like this is, it's really started to sink in. And then the texts start going back and forth between me, friends, colleagues, both on the broadcasting side, officiating side, coaches, and all the coaches were basically like, the only thing that's left is for the NCAA to step in and call the whole thing off. And that is exactly what happened, as Terry said. What was that, around 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, somewhere around there? And that's what happened. But still, you're processing this. You're feeling your way through. I got a text from my son, who's on the varsity at Loyola Blakefield. They were supposed to have a game today at Malvern Prep. He says, you know, and that game was, and then the governor, of course, of Maryland, Larry Hogan, had his press conference around 4 o'clock yesterday. Actually, a little earlier than that. And my son, Matt, said, no practice today, meeting at 3:30. So you're like, okay, this is when it's going down now for the high schools. But it really didn't sink in until I saw a photograph last night of the Penn State seniors. And I think I was on Facebook, because I'm friends on Facebook with Brian O'Keefe, Mac O'Keefe's father. And he put a picture up of the Penn State seniors on the Nittany Lion statue that's on the campus. And near the top were Mac O'Keefe and Grant Amon. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys are never going to play another Towers lacrosse game in their career. These two guys that we've been talking about all season, I've been talking about for 4 years, covering for 4 years, it's over for them. And that's when it really started to sink in for me. And much like, you know, the coaches as well, I think they've been dealing with, as Terry mentioned, it was like death by 1,000 paper cuts. Finally, the Band-Aid ripped off. Okay, now we have clarity. Now we know where we're going. And they went in from frustration mode into compassion, caring, and taking care of their players and making sure that their head was in a good space for what was going down. So just emotional, I think, is the way I would describe it. And now the emotions are really going to settle in over, you know, the next few days, few weeks as we deal with this thing.
Yeah, the images of, you know, the college basketball tournament with teams being pulled off the court prior to games. They're out there warming up, expecting to play and compete for a championship and being pulled off the court. Or even in the Big East Conference, where they got to halftime of the first game of the day and then had to cancel the game after half had been played. It seemed very real at that time. Terry, you talked to a lot of...
And to that end, D-Fly, I don't want to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt, but I got a call from my boss from Big Ten Network around 4:30, 5 o'clock yesterday evening as he was driving back to Chicago from Indianapolis. And he's basically like, yep, I know you probably heard the news, but, you know, we're done. You know, no spring sports, and that means no lacrosse coverage in 2020. And he was describing his situation in Indianapolis. I mean, the men's basketball tournament was canceled 10 minutes before the first game that was supposed to take place yesterday. Not only that, you had the Wisconsin coach, Fred Hoiberg,
Nebraska,
had a medical event.
Yeah.
Had a medical event. So that was in real time, you know, the cancellation and everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. And then you have a coach fall ill right in front of you. So that was, I mean, you know, he was on the front line in terms of, you know, being an executive and being involved and seeing somebody actually have a medical situation right then and there. So I think, you know, that was pretty sobering as well, the conversation that I had with him.
Chair, you speak to a lot of administrators and sort of executive level people in the sport. What's the reaction as the sport as a whole and in the big picture in the sports world?
Sure. Well, I mean, of course, there's no reaction for the sport as a whole, right? Like, that's obviously an individual context. One thing that was really interesting to me yesterday was on Wednesday night, I posted what had been kind of the biggest nagging question for me, which is, what is the value of cancellation over suspension? And my argument is that the only distinction between a suspension and a cancellation is the suspension is effectively a cancellation until it gets resumed. And so the benefit of suspension versus cancellation is time to make additional to gather additional information about both the decision to resume and also the outcomes of not resuming, so that you can exhibit a more clear message once a final decision is made if you do not choose to resume, and hope, meaning that the interested parties remain vigilant and remain hopeful so as to then, you know, be able to go about their day in a way where they're continuing to prepare for the opportunity to come back. And maybe the reason to cancel is because you don't want to provide false hope. And if that's the case, so be it. I believe that there is value in hope, particularly in situations like this. But in speaking with a number of athletic administrators who were on some of these decision-making calls, what I learned was, look for the word unanimous within the press release, because there are instances in which it's not there, and it's reflective of the fact that these were not decisions that were made with everyone feeling the same way. Now, everyone will comply, and I think in future times, folks might be glad that they complied, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the steps that were taken were agreed upon by all parties. So I think that's one thing to be aware of, is that there are folks who are complying with decisions that they might not otherwise have made themselves, were they left to their own devices. And then the second most revelatory thing that came across my radar on Thursday was speaking with the parent of a player who was really glad that the season got canceled because he was really fearful about his exposure to the disease. I think Rudy Gobert and then subsequently Donovan Mitchell testing positive for the disease was really eye-opening for a lot of these young guys and women relative to the risk of participation. I think that made it a lot more real toward the notion of, yeah, maybe I'm not going to contract this illness to the degree that, or I can contract this illness, but it's not going to affect me to the degree that it threatens my life. But I don't want to transmit it to my grandparents who are in a vulnerable position. So I think that the most thoughtful of the folks affected by this. And I thought that Michael Sowers posting a video through Princeton's Instagram and Twitter channels was really, you know, the subtext of his comments were very important. You know, certainly very few folks more greatly affected on the basis of his greatness and the work that he had put in to get there and the finality and the relative finality to the success he had had so far over the course of his four-year career and certainly to start his senior season. And yet, his comments were half directed toward empathy for the situation in total. And so, you know, for as dramatic as this outcome is, I think the folks that I have spoken to reflect an understanding of the fact that, you know, lacrosse is a small part of the sports landscape and sports are a small part of the national and global landscape, and this is a issue that's affecting the global landscape. So lacrosse seasons are a very small part of it.
Yeah, and that comment really puts things in perspective that there are lives at stake, and it is certainly better to take caution and be safe than sorry. Stacey, you work in the medical profession in your real job. Can you, what's the census or, you know, feelings throughout the medical community that you're picking up on?
Yeah, I think first thing, Fred Hoiberg, coach of Nebraska. Don't want to mix that up in the Big Ten scheme of things. But it's it's been a mixed bag. It's been an evolution. Earlier in the week, visiting facilities, having appointments, meetings, people are basically like, "Look, we're all going to get this probably in some way, shape, or form. It's just a matter of how we handle it," and people being smart about it. Much like the acceleration of events over the last 24, 48 hours in the scheme of college athletics, college lacrosse in particular, this discussion. I work for a big company, and we have been told to cancel all live meetings next week. And we're not alone. Other large companies are also following suit. Prior to that, I was getting notifications from facilities with all the meetings I have scheduled over the next couple of weeks. Everything for the month of March canceled. And that ranges from community hospitals, community physicians, to academic institutions and larger hospital systems across the board. No outside vendors, but it's not just vendors. It's, it's also just as you go into there as a patient, you have to be vetted before you're admitted into the hospital, entrance into the hospital. You have to have an appointment. You have to have a referral if you're there to be tested for COVID-19. There are hospitals in the area that have set up emergency tents in front of their emergency departments and medical facilities to test for COVID-19. This stuff looks straight out of the movie Outbreak. It's very real. And I think much like in the athletic world, the sports world, how it's evolved, it's also evolving in the medical community as they get a better understanding and a better handle on what they need to be prepared for in terms of resources, in terms of treatment options and testing and that kind of thing. So, and I have several friends that are doctors, and my wife spoke with one of her friends. They were classmates at Johns Hopkins, who's a physician. And she said, look, you need to treat this very seriously. This is no joke. People who have medical conditions, such as asthma, something that you might not consider to be a tremendous risk factor in a younger, healthier adult, a younger, healthier person, you're at risk because apparently this COVID-19 attacks the lungs like no other virus we may have ever seen in this country. And here's the other thing. Maybe it doesn't work out that way. And will it, at the end of the day, will it be it worked out because of all these preventative measures that have been put in place? Or is it going to be because this virus wasn't as potent as people think or thought it was going to be? And however this turns out, I'm okay with that. As long as human life is preserved, as long as people are healthy and people can weather this and move on with things. Because to Terry's point, life is so much more precious and much more important than games. You feel for these players. You feel for the student athletes, you feel for the coaches and everyone involved with the universities, with these professional leagues, et cetera, but at the end of the day, it's all about being healthy. And so that's where the medical community kind of stands right now. It's been an evolution, much like the sports world.
One of the issues that I think all of us are sort of grappling with is that it seems so remote. As these decisions have been made over the last couple of days, people are like, I don't know anyone afflicted with this or diagnosed with it today. But to your point, that sadly, we will know people, friends and family members who are afflicted with this and soon. So be safe out there. Now, to turn it to back to lacrosse action, what does this mean, Terry? With the 2020 season, do you think they'll just wipe it clean? Will points and records that people have set or attained throughout the first month and a week or so of the season count? Will there be any kind of awards? Or obviously, there'll be no titles that are won. So what do you think this will mean for the 2020 season?
So I was listening to a podcast recently talking about the accuracy of prediction. And two of the features that are associated with the highest rate of accurate predictions are a willingness to acknowledge that you don't and what you don't know, and choosing a future that looks a lot more like the past than one that looks a lot more aberrant. And with that being said, I also want to acknowledge that pretty much every prediction I've made about how this is going to unfold has proven to be wrong. And that's partly because I chose conservative predictions. So I want to once again state, I don't know. I don't know what this means for the 2020 season. I don't know what this means in terms of future ramifications. I think that, when we recorded our to never be listened to podcast on Thursday morning, I decided, or I did divided the unknowns into, or the subsequent questions, the immediate questions into two parts. What were the other future cancellations? And obviously that's been clarified over the last 24 hours. And what does this mean for the eligibility of all those affected? And at the time, I would have argued that I thought that the award of an additional year for athletes that went beyond their 30% threshold was likely. My personal, totally uninformed and unsubstantiated guess is that the cancellation of all spring sports across the entire NCAA landscape reduced the likelihood that folks would be awarded an additional year of eligibility, because the distinction or the size or the scope of the problem is so much more dramatic. Meaning that, like, if it was one conference dealing with, you know, four or five sports, and you know, that's a little bit more tenable than, I don't even know what the percentage of that, you know, hundreds of thousands of student athletes per year number is that plays a spring sport that's affected by this, but it's pretty big, and presumably it's probably in the nature of, you know, 30 some thousand. And so it just strikes me that this being such a broadly affected pool increases the likelihood that the ultimate decision is, we're sorry, but we have to move on. We have to move forward. Again, totally, total guess, totally unsubstantiated. And truthfully, I think I speak for everybody when I say I hope I'm wrong. But ultimately, even if I am wrong and the award of an additional year gets granted to every player that's affected or every senior that's affected, which would seem like a relative misapplication of the rule, ultimately those seniors that are going to be able to take advantage of it represent a relatively small number of the seniors who were playing this season, because, you know, their life plans and their own roster's ability to withstand their return are different. And if so, or if not, then their ability to find a home play elsewhere are different. And so, you know, my expectation is that for the vast majority of players, they've played, you know, the vast majority of seniors, they played their last college lacrosse game. And it's, as Mark said, it's a bummer. You know, there's no two ways about it. You don't want to call it tragic because, you know, we're facing a lot of situations that could be truly tragic. But you do want to call it sad. And so for the moment, until there's more clarity, and certainly that's going to be, you know, one of the primary things that we focus on at Inside Lacrosse over the course of the next couple days and weeks, however long it takes to, you know, feel like we've come to a definitive answer, you know, you just kind of focus on that sadness.
Yeah, sadness is a great word to describe it. People were asking yesterday, and as a sports fan, you know, it's a time when usually this is one of the best times of the year, March Madness and the college lacrosse season heating up, and we had to cancel everything. So, you know, usually sports are the time where we escape our daily troubles and bond with our neighbors, and we don't have that to fall back in this case. So what's next? You know, as we talk about lacrosse, and, you know, there will be eligibility issues and financial loss and money committed to scholarships and players with a new recruiting class coming in, and I'm sure, Terry, you'll talk a little bit about that with Ty and get his thoughts on the recruiting aspects of it. What's next, guys? Like, what's the next thing that happens for the sport of lacrosse?
I mean, I think there's so many variables. And look, this thing, spring sports are canceled, spring championships canceled. What's the next big thing when that's all said and done? It's college football. How does this situation, if at all, affect college football? Because, you know, you're going to have situations for obviously spring practice is going to be canceled, but you know, mini camps beginning in August, so that's interesting. But I think the more, and you'll probably get into this with Ty, Terry, what does this do for the summer tournament circuit, the summer lacrosse circuit, if this thing is truly, as one epidemiologist described it on the Joe Rogan podcast from a couple of days ago, I highly recommend folks tune that one in. It was the most level-headed and reasonable discussion I've heard on this situation so far. But if this is a coronavirus winter, as he described it, we could be in this thing for 3 to 6 months. And if that's the case, how does that affect the summer circuit? coaches going out to recruit players, in particular the class of 2022, you know, who is in that recruiting window now, come September 1st of 2020. How does that affect them? I think we don't know. To Terry's point, the student athletes that may have an opportunity to come back for an additional year, they may already have jobs lined up. And we look at the stock market, especially yesterday, the biggest loss in one day since 1987. Do those student athletes say, okay, I want to give this one more run? Or do they jump into the job market saying this opportunity may not be there in a few months if I don't take it right now? It's very, very difficult. And I think there's a lot of, there's just so many unknowns with this right now. Look, only one team can win. You know, in Division I lacrosse, 74 teams are going to be disappointed. Men's lacrosse, we're going to be disappointed in some way, shape, or form, whether they made the postseason or not, whether they got knocked out in the NCAA tournament, whether they got knocked out in a conference tournament. I think the bottom line there is they all can control their own destiny to a point. Here, you can't, no one controlled this. No one knew that this was coming. You know, Division III, you have over 150 men's teams playing, women as well. But Division I women, you know, what, 120 some programs. I probably got that number wrong because that side of things has really exploded over the last few years. But, you know, all these student athletes, they controlled whether or not they made their conference tournament, whether or not they got an NCAA bid, whether they won an NCAA game. And this is all out of their hands. And I think, as you know, the question is, what do we do moving forward? A lot of things are still out of their hands, out of their coaches' hands, out of our hands. I mean, it's just, that's the really frustrating part of this whole thing. We don't know how this is all going to work out, how this is going to break. All these athletic events canceled. I know you guys probably think in the same way that I do. You know, we're all married. Can we go to dinner with our wives? Can I go to the gym? Can I go to the bank? I mean, these
Mark,
are the
don't
questions.
Lie. You don't go to the gym.
How dare you? How dare you?
Because it's
I
a
might
health
not
risk,
look
man.
Like the picture. I may not look like the picture of health, but it's not for lack of trying. Okay, I'll tell you that. These are all questions that you know are first and foremost, and then you throw in all the other things, and it's really complex.
Terry, do you have thoughts on sort of the next step?
I mean, I think to Mark's point with respect to, you know, well, yeah, so I do. I think that the first next step is continuing to track the news over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks and seeing what gets resumed, right? Because while the college season, by and large, is canceled, if not completely canceled, you know, high school lacrosse is certainly, you know, by and large, been suspended. And so the prospect of resumption there is going to certainly be one of the things that we'll focus on. I think for Inside Lacrosse, you know, we are going to do our best to, you know, dive into everything that's happened over the course of the last week and separately over the course of the last 6 weeks with respect to what unfolded in these seasons. You know, one of the unfortunate parts of the way in which this sport has grown is that, you know, things move so quickly, it becomes very difficult to tell really compelling stories that have occurred. And so the opportunity, the very unfortunate opportunity to revisit a lot of those over the course of the next however long, 3 to 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, is really valuable. And so, you know, that is one element of our strategy. And certainly memorializing what occurred is a big part of it as well. So, you know, media polls and Player of the Year watch and All Americans and all that stuff. Well, you know, we plan to pursue all of those things. So, you know, I think that concurrent with that, we'll be, you know, monitoring the news to see how it will affect things that have so far, you know, been unaffected, such as summer plans. And so, you know, I think ultimately that's what's next, right? Trying to weather this immediate storm and tell the pertinent stories as they arise. Stay abreast of the developments and make decisions in the future on the basis of the information that's at present. So, you know, I think that the notion that there's still, you know, grasping at straws, for lack of a better word, of trying to salvage some element of this 2020 college lacrosse season is totally normal. It's totally rational. It's probably not very realistic, but at the same time, entertaining those options will be one of the things that, you know, makes getting through the next several days a little bit more palatable.
Six, as we wrap up this portion of the podcast, I want to get your sort of final thoughts on this, and in the frame of what do you think we'll say about this episode, this thing, 6 months from now or a year from now? How will we look back on this lacrosse season in the frame of the lacrosse season?
I mean, look, that still remains to be seen, but speaking here now on March 13th, I think we're going to remember some incredible offensive talent. Michael Sowers, Grant Ament, Matt Moore, and that's just like the tip of the iceberg. We saw a topsy-turvy season where Syracuse was the number one team when this thing got shut down with an incredible first midfield. Settling into the second year of the shot clock. So I think those are some of the key takeaways, at least from what happened between the lines. And the Ivy League was appearing to be dominance, chugging forward. And I think that's what gave a lot of people pause a few days ago when they canceled their season. What was four of the Ivy League teams were in the top 10. So I think those are some of the things you're going to remember. But I think when you think big picture, again, hopefully best case scenario, this thing isn't as serious as people think. And whether that's because of the potency of the disease or if it's because of all the preventive measures we're taking. But I think it's important that everybody keep things in perspective. I think in this political climate, this social climate, there tends to be a lot of finger pointing and a lot of, you're this, you're that. Look, we're all in this thing together. All of these decisions have been made out of consideration for the better good of humanity. And I'm not trying to get philosophical, but it's all about safety and keeping people healthy. And I think that is the biggest thing that we need to keep in mind. I'll be honest with you. When I saw the NBA cancellation of the season a couple nights ago, LeBron James earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week, had said, I'm not playing if fans aren't there. And the NBA really has been run by players over the last couple of years. So my immediate reaction was, are you kidding me? Like, they're caving to LeBron James. And then a few minutes later, it came out that Rudy Gobert, the player from the Utah Jazz, had tested positive for coronavirus. Then I'm like, okay, there it is. That story should have been first. They have a tangible situation where a player has tested positive for COVID-19. That's why they're suspending play. It's not because of the – but that's where my head went originally. And I think that's where a lot of people are right now. They feel like this is an overreaction. They feel like this is too much. But this is the new normal in our society. On a much lesser scale, think of, you're a dad, Dan, so am I, school cancellations due to snow. When the three of us were growing up, a snow day, the night we go to bed on a Wednesday night and there's the chance of snow, the next morning is like Christmas morning. You wake up and you're like, what did we get? You run to your window. Did it snow? And then you listen to your parents or you turn on the radio or whatever the case may be. And they're like, for me, it was Baltimore County Schools closed. You're like, oh my God, that's awesome. Now they close school if there's a threat of snow the night before. That's just where we are as a society. I'm not saying it's good or bad. Everybody has their own opinions on it. But the bottom line is we're all in this thing together. We have to support one another. If you're feeling sick, don't go to work. Call your doctor. If you have the symptoms that are in line with this COVID-19 thing, get checked out. Okay, get checked out. We were talking yesterday morning in a much different space. Don't be that tough guy. Don't be that tough girl going to practice, gutting it out. Let somebody know you're not feeling well. Get taken care of because you don't want to be that one person that causes a chain reaction. Now this goes in the broader scale of just in your office, in your community, in your church, wherever the case may be. Take care of yourself, and hopefully this is not going to be as dire as some people are projecting.
Dick, well said. I don't know the future of the Defiant Dixie podcast for the 2020 season, But as always, I want to thank all of our listeners for listening, and let everybody know to be safe out there, and take care of your friends and family and your neighbors, and be a good citizen.
And the D-Fly and Dixie Show continues with Terry and Ty, as I am joined by Ty Zanders, Director of High School and Recruiting at Inside Lacrosse. And Ty, we wanted to talk to you because you were one of the few folks who had an opportunity to attend a lacrosse game. After enduring many of these cancellations and suspensions of seasons were occurring, as you attended Gilman's win over IMG National at Gilman on Thursday afternoon. And I know it was a really emotional and poignant experience, and I think you described it in our prep conversation as surreal. Kind of taking in a lacrosse game, realizing that you didn't know when you were going to be able to see one again. So what was it like?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely surreal. I think that it was an experience that I looked at from multiple angles. I think, you know, so many of us are trying to come to terms with this whole situation. And we're thinking about ourselves, but so many of us are sad for all these seniors and all these players and coaches. But, you know, on a personal level, it was definitely surreal, you know, not knowing when the next game I could cover or attend would be. And I think to be at a place where I fell in love with a game when I was 5 or 6 years old, watching games there with my dad at Gilman, I think, you know, kind of added to it. And, you know, I think what was just so wild is just standing there and watching the game and trying to be present, but also looking at Twitter and seeing all these cancellations just pile up. I mean, from March Madness to the entire, you know, the spring sports championships, it was just almost eerie. You know, meanwhile, you're watching kids play, you know, not knowing the true magnitude of all this, not knowing if this would be their last game. It was crazy. And, you know, I think it definitely became, it felt real, I'm sure, to some of these seniors when, you know, I hear the student section behind me, you know, chanting, "Thank you, seniors." I think it's a wild reality, you know, right now with so much uncertainty. You know, I mean, they announced after the game that Gilman is off until April 3rd and doesn't look like there'll be high school lacrosse in Baltimore until, you know, then at the very least. So, yeah, I mean, it's just still crazy to process for so many people. And you know, I'm definitely fortunate that I was able to get to that game. And I think, you know, these players and the fans and coaches were all, you know, very, very fortunate and lucky and grateful to have that experience, because so many teams didn't, and so many high school teams haven't even started, you know, scrimmages or games yet and didn't have that chance. So, you know, it was a cool experience, but just an emotional, you know, roller coaster.
So one of the reasons that, in addition to, you know, kind of getting into the emotional side of this, I wanted to have you on to talk about the world of high school lacrosse and recruiting on a college preview podcast is because with the finality of the cancellation of the college lacrosse season, you know, whatever hope or optimism we have for getting some fresh lacrosse this spring turns to the high school season. And at this point, I think the best way to put it is it's A, too unmanageable to keep track of all of the different cancellation dates upon which we're then looking towards resumption on the backside. It's also very difficult to manage the cancellation of spring trips, many of which were set for the next 2 weeks. So, you know, by and large, it seems like the default assumption should be that, you know, probably 80% of lacrosse, high school lacrosse that was scheduled for the next 2 weeks is not going to occur as originally scheduled. But there is hope that it seems as if there were very few cancellations relative to the college season. You know, the hope is that after these academic suspensions occur, and if there is a resumption to live learning, then sports will be able to follow suit. And so really, you know, more than anything else, I would just advise folks to continue visiting Inside Lacrosse. You know, starting next week, we'll work toward trying to aggregate all of those news updates on the high school side. And, you know, the hope being that a month to 6 weeks from now, we'll have some live high school action to resume covering.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, to me, and to so many others, it felt like once college, you know, lacrosse season was essentially canceled, it felt, even though this wasn't the case, it felt like high school lacrosse was done too, to a degree, even though it's not. I think that's what's so important to remember, is that there is still, you know, hope. You know, and I think that is, you know, that is important, because I think that, and we'll get into this, to a degree, I feel like the class of 2020, these high school seniors, they really suffer. You know, it's not like they can just be given a fifth year and do it all over again. They've got plans to go to college. And, you know, I really hope that the high school lacrosse season can be resumed at some point. I think this is a key moment, a key, you know, instance that it's maybe just postponed. You know, I think everyone just wants some level of lacrosse. I know I do.
So one of the elements of this is, with the cancellation and the lack of clarity around future NCAA eligibility, there will be reflections on the high school class of 2016. And it's particularly poignant element because it was such a highly touted class coming out of high school, you know, particularly kind of after a 2015 class that wasn't that highly regarded, and kind of tipping off a three-year succession from 16 to 17, 18, leading to a 19 class that was kind of reflective of that 15 class that wasn't super highly regarded. And ultimately these 2016 seniors made such a contribution over the course of their college career that they were certainly setting up for a great senior season in college. And that's one of the, you know, really poignant disappointments that we're all processing right now. As you reflect on this group and try to put yourself into the position of watching them 4 years ago and then seeing the arc of development, you know, just kind of like top level, what comes to mind?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think so many of us are disappointed, you know, obviously for these guys, but it feels different because of how talented and accomplished so many of these players, you know, have been. You know, whether it's Jeff Teed or Doc Sakin, you know, the recruits one and two in that class, you know, Mikey Sowers. I mean, just so many players that I think gave, you know, so many lacrosse fans just so much joy. I mean, it's been a really fun few weeks and a fun few years. And I think that there's so much fear that we may not be able to watch these guys play college lacrosse again. And, you know, I think that really adds to it. Just this class was as special a class as I've ever seen. I felt that way to a degree when they were high school recruits. I mean, you really couldn't go wrong. And they all made us look very good with these rankings, but you know, that definitely adds to it. You know, and we're all hopeful that they can get that year back.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, we've seen reports, via different college sports reporters, on social media and elsewhere, that the NCAA has plans to address the issue of how this affects athletes' eligibility, you know, in short order, and we'll stay apprised of that. You know, and certainly regardless of how the eligibility issues are allotted and assigned, specifically whether it addresses seniors, whether it addresses all four classes that are affected by this, the impacts are going to be substantial, and there are going to be athletes who choose not to take advantage of their additional year if it is granted, and come back and play college lacrosse. So certainly, you know, the disappointment will be felt regardless of the forthcoming decisions. That being said, you mentioned something that we've been discussing a lot in the office over the course of this week, and that is the impact that this has on this high school senior class, and you find it to be particularly impactful. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think I'm going to go all over the place, you know, on this one, but it's there's so many moving parts, and, you know, and there's this trickle down, and people, you know, may ask, oh, you know, will these seniors get that year back? Yeah, we all hope that they do, and that's important, but it's not just the seniors that should be getting that year back. It's really all of these classes. And then, you know, as I mentioned, of course, you know, with this high school class of 2020, sure, you're going to have to compete for your playing time and, you know, earn those minutes no matter what, no matter the situation, you know, whether it's a pandemic or not, you've got to compete. But this was a curveball, you know, that I think was, you know, unexpected for these high school seniors as well in terms of thinking of their future. And I mean, it's very difficult. You know, it'll be very difficult to figure all this out, including from a financial standpoint. You know, I mean, 12.6 scholarships. I mean, think about some of these places that have loaded senior classes. I think about Virginia. You want these guys back for 5 years if they're granted that. But, you know, how do you juggle your scholarship money, you know, and you know, make sure you're taking care of Michael Krause and Doc Sakin and Jared Connors while, you know, all having promised that money out and doled it out in the high school class of 2020 that signed in November. And that's what's going to be, you know, that's a pretty big variable. But as is the case with all this stuff, there are just so many unknowns. And I think we'll keep getting into this. And I'm curious to get your perspective. But there's no doubt that this is going to be one of the biggest decisions, moments for the NCAA and really the Ivy League in terms of, you know, giving that fifth year out and allowing that fifth year, you know, and I'll probably throw it right back to you. I mean, what can you say about these decisions that they have to make? I mean, are they up there as the biggest in, you know, NCAA history?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot about this story. I think from like a global standpoint, from my point of view, and this might seem like, you know, a large, grandiose statement, but, you know, this, I mean, the world and the United States reaction to coronavirus or COVID-19 is the second biggest story, if not the second biggest story behind the attacks of September 11th with the, I suppose, to some extent, possibility of superseding that in terms of the biggest stories that have happened in my lifetime. And certainly these cancellation and suspensions are the most widespread news event in sports and in lacrosse in my lifetime. And so, you know, far-reaching, impacting more folks than any other story. And so, yeah, I mean, the stakes are huge. With respect to the choices that will subsequently be made, you know, I tend to, and I want to provide this, I want to repeat the caveat that I said early in this podcast. Every single one of my predictions, it feels like, has been wrong this week. I do feel like the fact that every single spring sport athlete is affected by this reduces the prospect of every athlete receiving an additional year of eligibility. Now, that's offset by how notable and how newsworthy this is. And so, you know, I do think that the, you know, public relations stakes that exist for the NCAA are really substantial. And that is, you know, one of the values of delay. A bit of additional time to consider the outcomes, to, you know, gain perspective from more parties and interpret that feedback into a decision is really valuable. And by virtue of making this decision to cancel as opposed to suspend, they've started the clock a lot sooner than they might otherwise had on making these decisions as folks try to prepare and make decisions around what comes next. And so I think, I'd prefer not to, you know, make a proclamation, even though I already did posit a guess, you know, and I think that, you know, to the point about scholarship allotments, you know, I want to say one thing that I think needs to be made clear, you know, so essentially, so the conferences that do not allow grad student participation, which, you know, to my knowledge are the NESCAC, Ivy League, and Patriot League, are facing a different decision in the sense that they don't necessarily need approval from the NCAA in order to grant a waiver to change their policy on a 1 or 4 year basis in terms of providing the opportunities for grad students. And so I think that makes that decision-making process a little bit easier. Obviously, if they don't grant it, then, you know, and their student athletes receive an additional year of eligibility, then they have to look elsewhere in order to find an opportunity to keep playing, should they choose to do that. Certainly with respect to, you know, non-scholarship athletes and programs, you know, the math of this becomes a little bit simpler. It's more about roster size and admission spot management. And, you know, that'll be something that I think is like a moderately easier thing to navigate. And then with respect to the scholarships, it's not as if there can be a, kind of 1 year reprieve on the implementation of a scholarship limit because, you know, these programs don't allot scholarships on an annual basis equally or equivalently across the board. And so, you know, there might be one scholarship that gives out or one program that gives out six scholarships in one class, entirely skips the next class, gives out six scholarships, and then entirely skips the next class. That's a strategy that could be employed, in which case they'd be shaping up to have 18 scholarships on their roster next year. Whereas there could be a program where they distribute scholarships evenly, you know, 3.15 every year, in which case they'd be shaping up to have, you know, 15.35 on their roster next year. Well, it's obviously, you can't just say, all right, we're going to allow everybody to have 15.35. That's not fair and doesn't necessarily solve the problem for that program that would be facing having 18 scholarships allotted next year. So it's just so different from program to program that one solution is not going to fit all. And so I think that you're not going to see that issue addressed. I think that 12.6 is the scholarship limit. The expectation is that you will remain within it and you are going to figure out as a program how to solve the problem yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think, you know, that was, you know, well said. And I think an important, you know, topic to hit on. And, you know, we were talking about this as we prep for this podcast and just kind of saying, there's so many unknowns and it's fair to for anyone to ask all these questions. But at the same time, we have to be patient. I mean, this is unprecedented on, you know, just about every level. And there will be decisions that had to be made that have to be made at some point, you know, for these individual players and by the NCAA and the Ivy League and all these, you know, individual administrations and scholarship numbers. I mean, there's so many, you know, moving parts. And I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how this develops, you know, moving forward. You know, right now, I think it's all kind of settling in and everyone's trying to come to terms with it.
So shifting the focus towards this summer, obviously, I think, you know, and I said this with Dan and D-Fly, or Dan and Dixie a couple minutes ago, but, you know, the next several weeks are about monitoring the news, seeing how the situation develops, and then trying to create expectations for how long this situation will be protracted. And until we know that, we can't really, and it's not really worthwhile to speculate as to what's going to happen this summer. I do want to make one observation, which is that, you know, one of the elements that made us so excited for this class of 2016 was the 2016 U19 World Games. And on a quadrennial basis, the 2020 U19 World Games are set to be played in Limerick, Ireland this summer. And depending on how the situation develops, those games may or may not occur as planned. So that's just, again, one thing to be mindful of. That stage was prominent for kind of the legacy building of a lot of these guys, including Jeff Teat, Toho Kananikok, Dox Akin, Michael Sowers, Ryan Conrad. And so, you know, we would the prospect of losing that opportunity for this group of 20s is meaningful and very difficult to swallow. All that being said, you know, Ty, what are your thoughts just in terms of the immediate right now reaction for what this means specifically for the class of 2022 as they hope to go through their primary moment of recruitment this summer?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's all to be determined. I think, you know, honestly, I'm thinking and almost more worried for the class of 2021, because I truly believe that, I mean, there's a lot of really good players in that class that are still out there that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the high school season, but it would really be, you know, catastrophic to a lot of their recruitments if they cannot play high school lacrosse in their junior year, you know, this spring. And I think that's what we have to understand. I mean, you know, keep saying it that, you know, sure, we're thinking about the seniors and what it'll mean for them. But this is going to have a really big impact for several years. I mean, this ripple effect is long lasting, you know, down, you know, maybe even past the class of 2022. So, you know, in regards to that class, you know, that is an unknown, you know, what the summer is going to look like. Will high school seasons be pushed back into June? You know, even more so. It certainly happens in New York and Connecticut already with their championships, but will this be a thing in the states that start a little bit earlier? You know, but for the 22s, it would definitely be a bummer for, you know, to have some sort of delay and a big curveball, you know, as we prepare to hopefully watch these kids, you know, perform and evaluate them, you know, throughout the spring and summer.
Yeah, I think that's the right point with respect to the folks who are going to be most negatively impacted by this are the folks who have improved the most, right? So their current and future performance would be most different from their past performance, because I think that, you know, whether it's an uncommitted 21 or, you know, the entire set of uncommitted 21s, or certainly everyone in the class of 22 and younger, you know, everyone's kind of in an equal position in the sense that it's not as if there aren't going to be, commitments made in the class of 2022, right? So, like, by hook or by crook, like, folks are going to figure out this solution, regardless of what gets played this summer, what gets played, you know, leading up to September 1st. It's just a question of how. Like, how are these decisions going to be made? And if they're made on the basis of video for games that have already occurred, well, if you're a lot better than you were on your video, then that's a bummer, right? You're that is a setback for you. And so, you know, I think the way people are thinking about this now is, all right, well, you know, what are the contingencies? What are the ways in which I can show the player that I am now, in order to, you know, kind of stay apprised of these future opportunities? And you know, again, that's one of the things that we're going to work on solving over the course of the next weeks and months.
Yeah, no, I think, and this is always, you know, you've always got to adapt and survive. I mean, there have been, you know, a lot of changes in the recruiting landscape, and this is a bump in the road. You know, it's a very big bump in the road, but we'll get over it, and everyone will kind of figure out, you know, how to go about recruiting these different classes. And I think, you know, what's kind of, you know, crazy to think about, I mean, this time, you know, yesterday, as you know, I mean, the Ivy League canceled and then, you know, the Patriot League was, you know, that was going down, and we still didn't know the fate of these college lacrosse seasons. But as these leagues, you know, announced cancellations or suspensions, I felt like these high school players could benefit in a sense. And recruiting could benefit because college coaches could go out there and recruit and go to these high school games, which, you know, I've always felt is a much better, you know, measuring stick for a player's game, you know, and a proper recruiting environment, and that hasn't really been able to be hit as hard as people would like, just due to these college lacrosse seasons going on. So it was encouraging at a point that these coaches could get out there and watch these games. And obviously right now, that isn't the case. You know, talking to a college coach yesterday before, you know, I headed out the door to Gilman IMG, you know, talking to someone and I'm said, I'm going to see you at a high school game today. Cause he'd asked what a schedule, you know, for the schedule of games this week. And then he responds back in a little bit saying, well, my administration won't let me, you know, we can't go and do anything. We can't coach. We can't recruit. You know, we can't go to these games. And, you know, it's just one of those things that I think really would have been, you know, great for these high school athletes, is to have college coaches evaluate their high school games, you know, outside of their own region too. You know, I think that would have been awesome. So it's a bummer that for now we won't get that. But my hope is that, you know, that's something that will occur down the road in April and May.
Well, Ty, that's a hopeful note to leave off on. One thing that, you know, I kind of want to leave this podcast with is the notion of irony, specifically around, you know, obviously this is a global story. It is a story that has affected sport at every level, and our lacrosse landscape and world is a small portion of that. That being said, lacrosse is unique among sports in the sense that it has a very spiritual component to it. And one of the elements of that spiritual component, you know, it's called the Creator's Game. One element is played to honor the Creator. It's also called a medicine game. It's played to provide healing power to someone in need. And so the irony is that in this moment when so many folks are in need, it's been deemed that one of the best solutions is not to play the game. And I feel like I want to leave listeners with that thought, because, you know, it really does, I think, strike home both the stakes and the unprecedented nature of this situation.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, hits so hard. And I'm glad writing this before I get even more emotional. But, you know, it's crazy to consider, you know, the potential of not watching lacrosse. You know, we put so much in this game, and thousands of people have put so much into this game, and it's everything, you know. And it was hard to get out of bed this morning, you know, knowing that I was not able to watch lacrosse. And then I walk outside my door in downtown Baltimore, and I see, you know, people with much bigger problems than not being able to watch a lacrosse game. And, you know, it's certainly bigger than the sport to a degree, you know, even though it's hard to look outside our own lacrosse bubble right now. But, you know, just crazy what's happened. And I think in general, you know, we're all lucky to have these relationships with people that, you know, were built through the sport of lacrosse. It's critical to have those relationships. And, you know, last thing I'll say to all the players at every level, you know, go and hug your seniors and you know, thank those guys and thank your coaches, whatever happens, you know, take care of those seniors.
All right, well, that'll do it for this edition of the D Fly and Dixie podcast. Obviously, no games to preview this weekend, but we will come back with more podcasts next week, and we certainly hope that you will visit InsideLacrosse.com to stay apprised of all the developments of this ongoing situation.